Paul McCartney. How did Paul McCartney become a millionaire? Was he born into a rich family? Was he a graduate of a famous university? Was he more intelligent than the people around him? The answer to all these questions is no. What Paul had was musical talent, some even say genius, and he was in the right place at the right time. Paul McCartney was born in 1942 in Liverpool, England. Paul is actually his middle name. His real first name is James. He loved music from a very early age. These were the days before television, so Paul spent many hours listening to songs on the radio. Paul's father, Jim, was a musician. He played the trumpet in his own jazz dance band. For one birthday, Jim bought a trumpet for Paul. "I tried to learn it, but my mouth hurt too much," Paul says. "Also, I wanted to sing as well as play, so I got a guitar instead." Paul had a problem when he took his first guitar home. It was for a right-handed person, but he is left-handed. "I didn't know what to do about that," he says. "Then one day, I saw a picture in a music magazine of someone with a guitar the wrong way round. He was left-handed. I thought, that's good, and I changed the strings around." One day in 1957, when Paul was 15, he went with a friend to a fun fair in Liverpool. John Lennon and his band, The Quarrymen, were playing there. Afterwards, Paul and John started to talk about music. They sang some songs together. "A few days later, I saw a friend of John's in the street," says Paul. "He told me, they want you to join their band. So we met again, and that is how we started playing together." Both Paul and John loved the music of Elvis Presley, Buddy Holly, Chuck Berry, and other rock and roll stars of the 50s. But they also wanted to create their own style of music. They spent a lot of time together writing songs. Paul's friend George Harrison joined the band as a guitarist. "I met George on the bus," says Paul. "We started talking because he was also interested in guitars and music. We became good friends." Paul's first show with the Quarrymen didn't go well. "It was a disaster," he says. "I got sticky fingers because I was so nervous and I couldn't play a really easy solo. I decided that night that I didn't want to be a lead guitarist." Paul played bass guitar from that moment. Despite that early bad luck, the band became more popular. Then the boys chose a new name, The Beatles. In 1961, they performed at a club called The Cavern in Liverpool. They also went to Hamburg in Germany. "I had a really cheap electric guitar in Hamburg," Paul says. "It looked good, but it was disastrous. One day we were on stage and it blew up. After that, I had to play the piano instead for a while." When the Beatles arrived back in England, a new drummer, Ringo Starr, joined them. In 1962, they released their first single, "Love Me Do." It reached number 17 in the British charts. The next few years were a phenomenon. The Beatles quickly became the best group in Britain, with songs like "Please Please Me," "She Loves You," and "I Want to Hold Your Hand." Why were the Beatles so much more successful than other groups? The world was waiting for a group like this, for a new style of music, for songs that were for the young people of that time. In the early days, the Beatles had a very clean image. They wore suits and ties when they performed, and their haircuts were identical. Their fans loved this image. Whenever the Beatles gave a concert, there were crowds of hysterical young girls and cheering young men. Many of the girls screamed the name of their favourite Beatle over and over again. The press gave this adulation a new name, Beatlemania. When you try to get to the top for a long time, and then you start to get there, it's a real thrill, says Paul. People thought the world was going crazy over the Beatles, but I was just happy that people liked us and our music. It was great. The band, kids screaming, everyone having a good night out. The Beatles' fame grew, and in 1964 they went on tour to America. Beatlemania started there as well, as the band gave concerts and appeared on a popular TV chat show. In the same year, they made their first film, A Hard Day's Night. Paul's role in the film was that of the nice guy in the band. In real life, he had that image as well. At meetings with the press, I was always the one who asked them, "How are you? Do you want a drink?" Paul says. I tried to make them comfortable. After all, we wanted them to write good things about us, so I didn't want to insult them. On June 12, 1965, the Queen invited the lads from Liverpool to Buckingham Palace. She gave each of them the MBE, Member of the Order of the British Empire. This award goes to people who contribute to the arts, medicine, politics, and other important areas. It also goes to people who bring money into Britain, and that is exactly what the Beatles did. But the awards did not please everybody. Some older MBEs didn't like the Beatles or their influence. They returned their own medals in protest. However, nothing could stop the Beatles' popularity with young people. It was like a tidal wave, a tornado, something uncontrollable. Also in 1965, the Beatles made their second film, Help. Like A Hard Day's Night, it was a box office hit. One after another, their songs went high in the charts. Some music critics said that John Lennon and Paul McCartney were the best composers of the 20th century. "Yes," says Paul, "it was certainly one of the best collaborations of the century. There was a special chemistry between us." Paul wrote his favourite song, Yesterday, around this time. It is a sad ballad about the end of a relationship. He actually composed it in his sleep. "One morning, I just rolled out of bed, sat down at the piano, and started to play it," he says. "I was so proud of it. I talked about it all the time. Once George said, 'You're always talking about yesterday. You're not Beethoven, you know.' In fact, there are more recordings of Yesterday by different singers than any other song in history. I think it's probably my best song, my most complete song," says Paul. "It doesn't have any imperfections." People often ask Paul for the secret of writing great songs. "It's a gift like any other gift," he says. "People want to know the story behind a song, but there isn't always a story to tell. I don't have a lot of control over some songs. It's like great acting or repairing a car. They are special talents, but writing songs is probably more magical because it's music." In the mid-1960s, Paul and John continued to write classic songs such as Eleanor Rigby, Penny Lane, and Strawberry Fields Forever. In 1967, the Beatles released perhaps their most famous album, Sgt. Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band. In the same year, the song All You Need Is Love became popular around the world among people opposed to war and fighting. But the Beatles were changing. Instead of suits and short hair, they grew their hair long and wore strange hippie-style clothes. They experimented with drugs. They became interested in Indian philosophy. They stopped performing in public. Then there was a rumour that Paul was dead. It occurred after he appeared in some photographs with his shoes off. That was a sign of death in some societies. "It was a hot day, and I simply decided not to wear shoes," Paul says. "I didn't know anything about the symbolism. Then someone telephoned me and said, 'Look, Paul, you're dead. It's a big story in America.' Some people stopped me in the street and said, 'Can we photograph you to prove you are alive?'" In 1969, John Lennon married Yoko Ono. In the same year, Paul married an American, Linda Eastman. "We met at a club in London," says Paul. "About a year later, we started thinking about marriage. Linda wasn't sure. She was married once before, and she didn't want to ruin our relationship. But we liked each other a lot, so we got married." Many fans didn't like these new influences on the Beatles. They wanted the group to continue as they were. But this didn't happen. In 1970, the Beatles' last film, Let It Be, appeared. In the same year, the band broke up. In the years after the breakup, stories often appeared in the press about arguments between Paul and John. "I hated it," says Paul. "I sat down and read every little paragraph, every sentence. I never liked criticism, even when my dad said, 'I don't like your trousers.' John's comments were like a friend betraying me. The bad feeling ended when a man called Mark Chapman shot and killed John Lennon in New York City in 1980. Now Paul looks back on his relationship with John and says, "Despite all the stories, the fact is we had a lot in common in the way we thought and the way we worked." Paul is also very proud when he looks back at the Beatles' years. "After we broke up, people stopped me in the street and said, 'You gave so much happiness to so many people.' I didn't really think they meant it, but now I believe we really did bring a lot of happiness to the Times." When the Beatles broke up, Paul was 27 years old. He was a rich man, but he still had lots of plans and ideas for his future career. "I needed to continue in music," he says. "I didn't want to retire or do anything different." In 1970, Paul began a career as a solo artist with a debut album, McCartney. Another album followed the next year, and then Paul and his wife started a new band, Wings. In 1972, they decided to go on tour. Paul was very nervous. "I was worried about lots of journalists sitting in the front row and saying, 'Oh, well, he's not as good as he was.' For that reason, Wings started with a small tour of British universities. That made me less nervous because it wasn't so big or important," says Paul. The band played their own songs. They didn't sing anything by the Beatles because Paul wanted them to have their own identity. Fortunately, the tour was successful, and the band then toured Europe. In the years that followed, Wings released some excellent singles, and the 1973 album Band on the Run won 2 Grammy Awards. Paul also wrote the theme song for the James Bond film Live and Let Die. In 1975, Wings toured Australia. All their concerts were sellouts. The fans welcomed Paul like a king. The following year, the band toured America. And then, in 1977, their record Mull of Kintyre sold more copies than any other single ever in the United Kingdom up to that time. Paul received a special award from the Guinness Book of Records in 1979. The award was for selling 100 million singles and receiving 60 gold discs. Paul was now the most successful composer of popular music in history. Soon after this, Wings broke up. Despite their success, Paul looks back on those years with mixed feelings. "There was always a feeling of anticlimax with Wings," he says. "It was very difficult to follow the Beatles because they were so big. We had a lot of success with Wings, but I was always comparing the group to the Beatles. It's a pity that Wings didn't happen before the Beatles or a few years afterwards." Paul worked on a variety of projects during the 1980s and 1990s. He released some new solo albums and also sang with other famous singers. In 1982, he recorded Ebony and Ivory with Stevie Wonder, one of Paul's favourite singers. The song was about the harmony of the black and white keys on a piano, and also about harmony between people of all colours and beliefs. It was a big hit. Paul also sang 2 songs with Michael Jackson, The Girl Is Mine and Say, Say, Say. Paul had a rare failure in 1984 when he made the film Give My Regards to Broad Street. Paul, Linda and Ringo Starr all appeared in the film, but it didn't attract big audiences. The following year, Bob Geldof organised the Live Aid concerts in London and Philadelphia to help the poor people of Africa. Geldof brought together many famous singers and bands, including Madonna, Tina Turner, U2 and Queen. At the end of the London concert, Paul McCartney came onto the stage. He sat down at the piano and played the Beatles song Let It Be. It was a very emotional moment. 1.5 billion people all over the world watched these concerts on TV. They were the biggest concerts in history and raised more than £100 million for charity. In 1988, Paul was the first artist from the West to release an album exclusively in the former Soviet Union. The album was Snova ve SSSR, Back in the USSR. The BBC World Service was so impressed that they organised a special live radio programme. The programme gave Paul's Russian fans the opportunity to phone and talk to him in person. Margaret Thatcher, the British Prime Minister at the time, was on a similar programme the week before. Paul had five times as many callers. People in many other countries had the opportunity to hear Paul's music in 1989 and 1990 on a world tour. The tour went to 13 countries. Paul played more than 100 concerts to a total of 3 million fans. The concert in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil, had an audience of 184,000, the biggest ever audience at a concert. In Sydney, Australia, 20,000 tickets sold out in 8 minutes. Paul went on tour again in 1991, visiting places like Barcelona, Naples, and Copenhagen. Then in 1993, there was another world tour. It covered 120,000 miles, lasted 9 months, and visited 19 countries, including Spain. In 1991, Paul surprised the world of music when he and the conductor Carl Davis composed the Liverpool Oratorio, a classical piece for orchestra and choir. The first performance was in Liverpool Cathedral. At the end, the 2,000 people in the audience stood on the cathedral seats and cheered. "That performance was one of the most moving experiences of my life," says Paul. The Liverpool Oratorio was soon top of the classical album charts in the United Kingdom and America. Another classical piece by Paul, Standing Stone, appeared in 1997. Paul and Linda now live in the south of England, but Paul showed his love for Liverpool again when he built the Liverpool Institute for Performing Arts, nicknamed the Fame School, after the school in the Hollywood film. The Institute for Talented Young People is on the site of Paul's old school. Paul told the first students, "The Institute is here to help you make your dreams come true. It's great that we are now using my old school to help the next generation, and it's exciting that my hometown will be the home for tomorrow's talent." There was another reminder of the past in 1994, when the three surviving Beatles finally reunited. Yoko Ono, John Lennon's widow, found a tape with an unfinished song by John Lennon, "Free as a Bird," and she gave it to Paul, George and Ringo. "We pretended that John was just away on holiday," says Paul. "We imagined that he said, 'OK, I've finished all the songs on the album except this one. I'm sorry, I can't get to the last session, but I leave it to you to finish it. Just do your normal thing. I trust you." The best moment was in the studio when we heard John's voice in the headphones. It felt like he was there with us. "Free as a Bird" was the first new Beatles single for more than 20 years. At the same time, the Beatles anthology television series came out in over 100 countries. The series told the story of the Beatles and included interviews with Paul, George and Ringo. Three Beatles anthology albums came out in 1995 and 1996. Beatlemania was back as sales of Beatles albums worldwide in 1996 reached 20 million. Paul McCartney became Sir Paul McCartney in the same year when the Queen gave him a knighthood for services to music. Linda McCartney's father once told Paul, "Make sure you stay ordinary." That is difficult advice to follow when you are one of the richest men in the world, as Paul is. He is worth more than £500 million, and he receives millions of pounds every year from his songwriting and other business activities. These include MPL, McCartney Productions Limited, a company with many interests, including song publishing. However, over the years, Paul has tried to stay ordinary in his private life. In 1995, he and Linda helped their local community in the south of England. They gave money to open a new hospital when the old one closed. As vegetarians, Paul and Linda also care a lot about animals. They won an award for this in 1996. They even once did the voices for cartoon equivalents of themselves in an episode of The Simpsons about vegetarianism. Paul also tries to be an ordinary husband and father to Linda and their children, Heather from Linda's first marriage, Mary, Stella and James. When the family lived in London, Paul shocked the other parents when he collected Mary and Stella from school every day. Once, young Mary said to her father, "You're Paul McCartney, aren't you?" Paul explains, "When she talked to me normally, she just called me Daddy. When other people were there, though, I was the famous Paul McCartney." Now Paul and Linda are the proud parents of one of Europe's top designers. Their daughter Stella is chief designer at the House of Chloe. When Stella put on her first show, the models were her friends Naomi Campbell, Kate Moss and Yasmin Le Bon. Paul and Linda were sitting in the front row.